Hello and welcome to Mess Explores, formerly Miss on Scene with Xavier and Alan, where, as always, we'll be looking at all manner of film and theatre from around the world. Now, remember to follow us on your favourite listening platform as well as on Facebook or Instagram, and be sure to check out and subscribe to on our new YouTube channel, Mess Explores, for other special shows and television content. This week, we're relating to fatherhood, so let's get out the pram of emotions. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Save, and of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mass Explores. Before we change diapers, evade outcries by white noise and vacuums, and play a monumental part in bringing up a child, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we contain spoilers. As Save said, we are looking at Fatherhood, which is a 2021 film, which is directed by Paul Weitz, and the screenplay is also by Dana Stevens and Paul Weitz. Fatherhood stars Kevin Hart, Alfred Woodward, Lil Ray Howie, DeWanda Wise, and Melody Heard, just to name a few. Fatherhood is based on Two Kisses for Maddie, a memoir of loss and love by Matthew Longlin. Now, as mentioned last week, due to the consistent fan feedback, we are no longer recapping this film prior to discussing it, and instead we're going to delve straight into the analysis. So with that being said, Save, what did you think?
Well, this was a lot more of a soulful film than I'd expected from the outset, but I actually ended up enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. And this is mostly due to a sort of a conflict I have with Kevin Hart. And I just didn't expect this sort of role from Kevin Hart. I struggle taking him seriously in these sorts of roles, as I just don't typically think of him as being a particularly brilliant actor in general. But on this occasion, he actually genuinely surprised me. And he was a believable new father in the delivery scene, and he managed to carry a credible father role throughout the film, no doubt drawing on some of his personal experience and emotion as a father. So, yeah, really, on the whole, I quite like this. How about you?
Look, before I give you my thoughts, let me address a few points that you've mentioned. And you're right, Kevin Hart did shock us with a varying style to what he's commercially known for. And I frankly really enjoyed it. Now, he's previously attempted something like this in the film The Upside, which is a remake of The Untouchables, which we have an episode in our season one catalog. For those who haven't listened to it, please check it out. Now, in The Upside, he stars alongside Bryan Cranston. And if it had not been for the Harvey Weinstein debacle, I think the film would have done much better. But I believe that this is the dawn of a new Kevin Hart we're about to see. The result might not be as clear as night and day. And the reason I believe the result might not be a clear night and day is because there's a certain portion of his fan base and possibly studio producers, you know, who sort of expect certain mannerisms from him when we see him on screen. So you can't just make that stark character juxtaposition immediately. It has to be done incrementally. And I believe that's why we sort of see some of his quirks embedded in the character of Matt.
I've no doubt that Kevin Hart is seriously typecast, but by the same token, I think he's either a victim of his own making or perhaps he's exactly where he wants to be. But either way, as an audience, it does make his job of convincing us that he's anything other than sort of a shallow comedian bit of an uphill battle. But that being said, he does seem to be trying and perhaps even winning, and particularly if he maintains this caliber of role. But here he's taken on a very real and emotional story. So do you want to go into a bit more depth around that for our audience?
Yeah, look, I think it's important to mention that this is actually based on real life events that was posted on a blog by Matthew Longlin. Now, his wife passes away shortly after the birth of their daughter. And Longlin is faced not just with grief, but the challenges of being a new parent. And he has to work all this out as, you know, while being a single father. And he decides to write a blog about his experiences. And it actually becomes popular in 2008. So with that being said, Save, let me just tell you what I thought about this film. This is an unexpected film that evokes all the right feels and some wrong ones. Kevin and Melody were a duo that gelled to the point where it was actually believable that they were father and daughter. Even though the story is about a father raising his daughter alone, it's never just them two. Throughout the entirety of the film, it's always the three of them. And when I say the three of them, I mean the spirit of Maddie's mother is ever present. Her loss actually reverberates through the fabric of the narrative, and done right, it should. And these moments are further amplified when the character of Maddie requires maternal tasks to be performed, like a goodnight kiss or combing of her hair properly. And I think these moments really pull at the heartstrings. And as a new father myself, these things really resonated even deeply. Now, one aspect of this film I really enjoyed, and this is something that other films have rarely explored, is how another person entering the primary carer's life can actually detract from the care and attention which is mandatory for a child. In this film, this complex issue is actually delicately displayed on the screen. But look, with that being said, Save, there are a few things that I've hated, and that's his friend circle.
Okay, look, this film really went a lot deeper into the subtle and not so subtle elements and the complexity of this loss, and did so in a far more eloquent way that I had ever expected from an American film, let alone one with Kevin Hart. You know, neither of these are generally associated with eloquence and finesse in such narratives, which is usually the sovereign domain of European cinema, in my opinion. But in particular, the competing interests of family and friends at a time of greatest need, when all he needs is support, was just so well done. And I feel that it is of utmost importance to reiterate the fact that those who have lost people have to deal with total morons who have no idea how to behave around grieving people. And everybody's loss is as unique and cold as a snowflake. But I can relate, and some of the bewilderingly stupid things that some people said to me at a time of great grief still astounds me to this day. And we're getting on for a decade later, and there are still people I have refused to have any dealings with since the funeral. However, with that personal reflection in mind, like you, the dumbass friends and people started to really grind my gears in this film, as it was all too relatable, and frankly, I just wanted to reach through the screen and coat hanger the likes of Jordan. Now, I don't know if or perhaps how accurately portrayed such a character was to the original material, but I find it hard to believe someone like him would have been kept in the picture at such a trying and emotional time. Whereas your comment about having someone else come into the life of the sort of the primary carer and how that can take time away from the child because the relationship dynamic changes, I think that is so true, and it is one of those things that's very important to get right. And I like the fact that in this film, it was painted in such a way that he understood his priorities, but yeah, there were shortcomings, that people are still human. So I think you're right. On the whole, it was done well, but yes, the friends was ghastly.
I understand that, you know, they could be insensitive friends, but I feel like this film just shoehorned that character of Jordan in to a point where it just became unbearable.
Mm.
And it was just painful, say, painful.
It was comic relief gone too far.
Yeah. And maybe that slapstick type of comedy works for some people, but for a global audience, it felt very, very unrefined.
Yeah, I felt almost like it was trying to offset the fact that Kevin Hart was being a bit more serious, so they tried to put in a Kevin Hart-esque type of comedic character, and it just wasn't necessary.
Speaking of things that we didn't like about the film, there have been some controversial comments made about this film, and I just want to talk about that, Zane. So one of them is actually derived from Odie Henderson, which is a reporter at the Robert Ebert blog. Now, Odie stipulates, and I quote, that colorblind casting is often done with no regard to how much or how little it affects the plot or one's suspension of disbelief. Sometimes it creates the potential for a more interesting take on the material, which movies rarely go down because the script has been written for the casting default rule and not the exception. Now, since this is a true story, we can't expect too much deviations from the events that actually occurred.
Yeah, look, I'm not wedded to the source material, so I don't have any particularly strong views on this, except to say that in all likelihood, this film was probably made with a black cast solely for the purpose of diversity, as it is in no way honest to the true story on that front. And there, in my opinion, would be absolutely zero reason to change the ethnicity of Matt except for a political agenda. Now, I'm inclined to say I don't care who you are or where you come from, but if you're making a filmic version of a true story, then stick to the facts at large. But as I said, I feel this film managed to execute the deeper meaning well on the whole, so I'm not actually going to be overly critical of that point from a strictly creative front.
Say, it's actually funny that like the same comments come up again, because we actually discussed this in our Intouchables podcast episode as well, so there's more info in there if you guys want to check out that episode as well. Now, other censors have also critiqued that the film attempts to sort of act as a PR campaign to render Kevin's somewhat tethered image as a result of his past comments towards the LGBTQI plus community. In the film, Kevin says, oh, it's 2021, and he's referring to girls being allowed to wear what they want in this particular generation.
And I think it kind of went beyond even just girls, because he does make a point about, you know, girls wear pants and boys wear dresses. And for me, this was a stupid little poke which actually came up twice, and it was especially unnecessary in the credits scene. For me, it didn't add anything to the film except peddle an agenda in an otherwise unexpectedly nice film. And this 21st century pandering garbage is beyond tiresome to me. Anyone that's listened to our previous episodes will know I'm a bit fed up with all of this. And the thing is, if you go far enough back in history, girl meant child, irrespective of gender, and pink was for boys, and ballet was strictly for men. So everybody just needs to get the hell over this politically correct minority pandering utter nonsense and focus on something that's actually meaningful, which I feel is what this story and narrative and the original source material, the book, was actually trying to focus on and not 21st century agendas.
Look, I think I agree with you there, Saber. Finally, this is not a criticism per se, but just something that I wanted to see in the film. We know that Matt loses his wife due to a PE or a pulmonary embolism, which is essentially a blood clot in your lung. But what I would have preferred is if they had a little explainer on how that occurred or why it occurred. It almost felt ominous when the film portrays that if you get pregnant, you'll die of a PE, rather than explaining the context behind why she got the PE. And in the blog, it actually mentions that Liz's pregnancy wasn't easy and she was actually hospitalized on bed rest for several weeks before her daughter was born. The immobility and the reduced vascularity to her legs seemed to be the leading contributors. Now, this is why pregnant women are actually asked to walk during the third trimester.
This actually didn't bother me so much, to be honest, as all that was important from the emotional sake of the film was the devastation of loss and not the how or why. In my experience, knowing the how doesn't necessarily lessen the pain, but I do understand where you're coming from. That being said, though, I really like the scene that I'm just sort of going to call Push It. It's where they played the music, because this was the scene where Matt is finally free to forge his own path and find his own way, which ultimately is the only way to grow as an individual and as a family unit. Yeah, and obviously Matt and his daughter, Maddie. Now, we all have to find our own way, and the scene with Matt half naked in the meeting was great, and I felt that it showed a developing understanding in the corporate environment, as this is something which in recent years has certainly been gaining greater exposure in the West. I can't necessarily speak for other regions, I don't know, but it seems to be that it's an increasingly visible part of life that isn't as cut and dry as the nuclear family that with a stay-at-home mom and the breadwinning father. Yeah, the world has come to sort of realize finally that life is more dynamic than that, and even without extenuating circumstances, I feel more fathers are taking on an active role in their children from a younger age, and that's to be celebrated. And I feel like the film gracefully navigates some of the finer aspects of life struggles, such as work-life balance and sole parenting, and that it was done in such a way that there was the right balance of emotion and laughter in this film too. So on the whole, I wasn't too concerned that we didn't get too deep in the nitty-gritty of why Liz passed away. But that being said, the film sort of did feel like it set it up in such a way that if you need to have a C-section, then you're at a greater risk of a PE, and it's a bit more ominous. But again, I wasn't too fussed.
Speaking of evoking emotion, Safe, I want to talk about the characters that who actually brought this to screen. And let's start off with Maddie. Maddie is embodied by Melody Hurt, who's for sure an up-and-coming actress. She's able to tackle a complex character of a girl who matures and yearns for a mother and is BFFs with her father. Her chemistry with Kevin Hart is so palpable, and she evokes sassy and innocent childlike candor with ease. And if you don't like Kevin Hart, you can surely watch this film just for Melody. Now, the next character I want to quick look at is the character of Swan. Now, this is the first time I've seen DeWanda Wise on screen, but man, she is someone I want to see more of. DeWanda is demonstrating that she is a stealer of scenes. You know, even though the role that was given to her was a stock role, DeWanda evokes a character as both independent, fierce, empathetic, and eventually maternal to Maddie. And actually, what happens in reality is that she ends up marrying Matt. And the final character I want to touch upon is Marion. And this is embodied by Alfred Woodard, who was, in my opinion, such a show stealer and a potential audience favorite. Now, she plays jump rope with being tenacious and resounding. And this is a character who has lost her own child, but at the same time has received a grandchild. And those ping pong moments going back and forth, mate, it is absolutely refreshing to see someone like this.
I actually found that DeWanda was probably my favorite of the sort of female characters.
Okay.
Because you're right, I would actually like to see more of her as obviously an actress. I think she did a really great job, and she brought this vivaciousness to the role that I really wasn't expecting. She was like literally a little ray of sunshine in an otherwise gloomy film. And I know that's a bit of a cliche, but she really did have that effect. And I sort of went, I felt that the promise and hope that the character of Maddie would have felt. And so I really like that character. But I think the other one, Elfrey, is, you can never really go wrong with her. She always plays this stronger sort of character in all the things that I've seen her in. And I think she really was a wonderful fit for this, because she is that stern maternal presence, but she also has a warmth to her once you sort of break down her walls. But I think it's interesting that you've just pointed out three female leads in a film which is actually essentially about a man, a father. But I think that's important because, as we know, no man is an island and women can make us so much more. And Matt actually mentions the fact that he is immature, but that he is in essence trying to be the husband and father and moreover the man that Liz always wanted him to be, because no one forges themselves on their own. So I think it was wonderful that this film actually had such strong female leads to support what was otherwise a one-man show.
Look, I think you're spot on the money here, Safe. I don't think the women steal the show, but they just complement the narrative and they give Kevin Hart that extra support.
Exactly.
With that being said, Safe, let's look at the themes that we've seen throughout the film. So first, can we talk about a fatherhood's suggestion that men must learn to parent while women are born knowing how? What do you think fuels that idea? And how do these assumptions and premises actually affect the viewer's perception?
Look, that feels like a very loaded question because this is the 21st century after all and everyone gets a bit uppity these days. But while I'm sure there are good and bad parents out there, both mothers and fathers, and some will be better than others and vice versa, the basic biology of the matter is that females are designed to raise the young. For example, the fact that you can now buy baby formula doesn't take away from the fact that women are designed to feed, or likewise, overcome with hormones and emotional bonding at the time of childbirth despite great physical pain and trauma. Women are designed and equipped for exactly this role in so many ways, and rather than people moaning about men and women and their differences at a social level in predominantly negative light, I think society would actually do better to just celebrate the astounding abilities and achievements of women and embrace that difference as something wonderful and not something divisive. And I think a lot of the issues that we see in this, particularly around, you know, assumptions and how it affects viewers' perceptions of these issues, all comes from that negative social light and about the fact that basic biology shouldn't rule your role or determine your future. But I think we need to step away from that at a certain point and just accept the fact that men and women are distinctly different in so many ways, and that that is okay, that that's a good thing. And that rather than drag it down the pathway of, well, you know, if a woman takes time off work, it ruins her career, I think more value needs to be placed on the fact that women do those things and they do a wonderful job of it, and ultimately they raise the future generations. So I think while fatherhood looks at how it is for a father doing both roles, I don't think that should detract from the fact that women inherently are naturally very capable and by and large wonderful at that role straight out the gate.
I think you've hit that nail on the head, Zabe, and I'm not even going to add to that because that was just beautiful. Moving on to the next thing I want to discuss with you is, how does Matt incorporate Liz, Maddie's mother, into Maddie's life? We know that Liz doesn't exist anymore, but I think this film explores all these different ways where he sort of interweaves her memory into the fabric of not just the narrative, but also into Maddie's life.
And I think this is a very important thing for anyone that has loss. It doesn't have to be your mother or your child. It can be your friends or your partner or anything like that. Any profound loss is going to be felt in different ways by different people. And in this particular narrative of how Matt keeps Liz in Maddie's life, obviously there's elements of it through, you know, the two kisses, one from mummy, one from daddy, the necklace where he allows her to choose a piece of jewelry from her mother's jewelry box and sort of take on that piece of her mother so that she can physically feel like she's carrying a piece of her with herself. But I think there's also these other things where I'm pretty sure he mentions a line about the fact that people live on in us, in our soul, and it's sort of through our memories of them. And I think that's an important thing too, and particularly when a child hasn't ever actually experienced their parent, certainly not at a point which they remember them. Obviously, she had the first few moments or days with her mother, but that was all. And I think, to my mind, reminding her and telling her stories about what her mother was like and showing her pictures and not making her this person that's forgotten or not talked about because it's too hard, but embracing the fact that that love was there regardless of whether she got to show it to her own child or not is important. And I think it's one of those big things that lots of people do very differently. It seems to be a very divisive issue. Some people will shun a death and never talk about it again. Others will embrace it. And I think it's different for everybody, but particularly important for a child to know that that person, whether they're passed away or not, would have loved them and still would have been a part of their life, and that it's okay for them to experience that loss even though they don't remember the person.
You're spot on again, Zave. I think what Matt does best is he doesn't let her absence be permanent, whether that's through stories or jewelry or other trinkets or just memories. He continues to infiltrate Maddie's life in a good way with the blessed memories of Liz. And even though he can't fulfill that gaping hole in Maddie's life entirely, especially when we see her at her friend's sleepover and she doesn't have that mother there to kiss her goodnight, he still does a great job 95, if not 99% of the time. But where he falls short is when he introduces another woman into his life and resultantly Maddie's life.
Why do you think he fell short?
Well, I think the film explores the complexities of bringing somebody else into both his and Maddie's life and the impact that actually has, where his attention now is divided between the other person and his daughter. And he feels it when he forgets to give her the two kisses, when he's not there to pick up the 18 missed calls and she ends up in hospital. Look, she might have ended up in hospital regardless of if she picked up that call or not, but I think his fear is that there shouldn't have been 18 missed calls on my phone when it comes to my daughter's welfare, and that's on me. And that's why I think that's what he feels the weight of that relationship was too much for him to process.
But I don't think that was necessarily a shortcoming. I think that was him being overly critical upon himself, and the fact is that irrespective of whether you're raising a child on your own or not, you still have to look after yourself and you still have a life. And had he not done some things for himself. Ultimately, he would have probably ended up deeper into the situation where he was just completely unable to look after her and ended up leaving her with the grandparents full time because he had basically sacrificed too much of himself to go on and actually be a wholesome father for her and ever potentially find love for someone else that then ultimately helps Maddie also share the love of someone else with him. And I think that was portrayed where we sort of saw this jealousy in Maddie where she was very possessive of her father and she didn't want to share him. And for me, the character of Matt then actually taking some time to himself, albeit making mistakes along the way, was important. So I think it was more about him being overly critical of his own behavior than the fact that he did anything wrong.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned her being overprotective of her father, because we see that when she meets Swan for the first time, she grips Matt's hands tightly. And I think that's her innate response. This is someone that she shared or been a part of all this time. And if you want to come into our lives, you have to earn it, and you have to earn it through me.
And I think that's the thing. I think some people would have perceived that as she was fearful of Swan, perhaps. But I certainly got the impression it wasn't a fearful thing. It was a possessive thing. And she was saying, no, this is my father. This is my pack. We are a pair. You, as you say, need to earn your way into this situation or into this pack.
Yeah. Now, another thing this film explores is bullying. Did it feel realistic to you?
It actually felt a little awkward, to be honest. And it's because it seemed to immediately peddle the poor black kid versus the mean white boys trope. And for me, that took away some of the efficacy. I think if you're going to go to the extent of changing the vast majority and narrative of this to be a different ethnic group, then you equally need to be very careful of the characters you don't change. Because I think that created something which they may not have intended, but that's how it came across. And for me, it didn't quite work because it wasn't a case of Maddie being an underprivileged, less affluent kid from the boroughs. She was very much a child that fitted into this situation. But simply the fact that they had, in my opinion, miscast when they changed the ethnicity of casting gave it a political perception that I don't think was actually meant to be there. So while the childhood bullying in itself felt natural enough, I think the overarching feel of it was just a little bit askew.
Ryan, I think the film was trying to shoehorn in 21st century rules. Obviously this is based on a true story. So, you know, maybe it was a Catholic school and they were strict on uniform and, you know, that's just the way it was. But it did feel like he did glorify political correctness a little bit too much.
And I don't think it was even an issue of the fact that it was Catholic school or whatnot, because that could very well have been true. And I don't think that felt like an issue in the narrative, even as it was delivered. I think it was just, as I said, if you're going to change ethnic groups for some of the film, then you need to be very careful of the bits that you don't change, because inherently not taking that action can accidentally, or maybe even intentionally, create a subliminal meaning that may not have been intended.
So the final thing to say is Matt's relationship with his mother-in-law. And I think that was a very complex, and it was a back and forth tug of war for who can support Maddie the best.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it felt like a little bit of a contentious relationship. And I actually got a whiff of The Pieces of a Woman dynamic, a film we did previously in this podcast series, about the relationship between the son-in-law and the mother-in-law. Now, obviously, Pieces of a Woman went down a different path. The child didn't live in that situation, but the mother did. In this case, the child survived and the mother didn't. But it felt very much like it was going to get to a point of, well, is the mother-in-law going to become all-powerful and ultimately say, you're not good enough, get out, go away, I'll do it myself. I know best. I'm glad it didn't go down that path, and obviously we know it doesn't because it was based on a true story. But it did make for a very interesting dynamic, particularly for anyone that doesn't know this story otherwise, because you weren't really sure where it was going to go. But these were ultimately two very headstrong characters. Matt is headstrong but damaged as a result of recent events. Marion's headstrong and damaged, but also has the years of experience behind her, which gives her a confidence, if not an arrogance, to think that she knows best. So it was a very interesting dynamic between these characters.
Yeah, and it's not an easy answer as well, because...
No, not at all.
Matt's juggling the pressures of his work, along with raising a child, and he's doing it all by himself.
And I think it's only natural for someone in Matt's position to, at times, look for an escape, because it is hard work being a single parent.
Wow. What a layered film, Zay.
And can I actually say, too, on the point of the difficulty, this film highlights the fact that trauma isn't gotten over in days, weeks, or years. You know, you never actually get over it. That's a misnomer. You just get used to it. Yeah. And no matter what anyone says, if you haven't experienced profound loss, then you can never understand it. And even if you have, it's a little bit different for everyone, as I said previously.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really important point to this film, because the characters of Matt and Marion and Jordan and Swan and Maddie and Howard, all these people that were involved in this loss in some degree, whether it was immediate or third party, just feeling the effects of these characters, they all felt something in their own unique ways, and it all had an impact on them. Whether it was just their employee not showing up, as was the case for Howard, played by Paul Reiser, or whether it was the day-to-day life for the likes of Matt, or even if it was his friend Jordan. All of these impacts were significant, and this death was felt by all of them in some way, but it doesn't mean it was the same for all of them.
No, it's funny how, because you see everyone in this film trying to put themselves in the other person's shoe. Like for his friend Jordan, his way of dealing with it is, let's go to the bar and just, you know, let's go back to our roots of how we used to be before you got married. You know, like he really can't empathize with what's going on. But from his perspective, that's a normal way of grieving.
And I think this is the thing too, though, that people don't necessarily understand how to behave around someone that's suffered extreme grief. And even as someone who has experienced that sort of grief, I've subsequently witnessed it with other people, and I haven't even known what to do. And I'm someone that has been in that situation. But it is exceptionally difficult because everyone is so different. And I personally had friends that didn't know what to do with me. So they literally disappeared of their own volition, and I've never seen them since. I've had friends that did arguably the wrong thing, and it took a long time for us to rebuild the relationship and for them to actually understand maybe we didn't handle it so well. There's people I got rid of because I didn't handle the loss particularly well. And okay, people are a little bit more forgiving for you in that situation if you're a direct recipient. But at the end of the day, it doesn't exonerate you from still being a decent person. And so there's people I've come back to 7 years later and said, I'm sorry for how I treated you back in those days. Mm. And I think that's really one of those important things that it's trying to say, is that not everyone knows how to deal with someone that has that loss. And, you know, likewise, Marion thought that she could do better. Matt thought that he could do it on his own. Jordan just wanted to find another way to help his friend through it, albeit not necessarily the right way. But that way could be right for someone else. So you just never know. It's a minefield situation for anyone to be in.
There's no right or wrong answer here.
No. There's definitely some wrongs, but you might only know that if you're the direct recipient of it.
You're right, Dave. It's so complex, and it's just one of those things that you have to deal with day by day.
Mm, absolutely. As I said, you don't get over it, you just get used to it.
Mm. So with that being said, let's wrap this film up.
Okay, so this film felt well cast, and the execution of roles was surprisingly natural and felt genuinely heartfelt. I was particularly surprised Kevin Hart had the chops for it, given he usually plays arguably such dim-witted or crass roles, including some of his stand-up routines where I've heard him deliver shows which couldn't be further removed from seeming like a genuinely compassionate husband and father. But obviously he had the personal experiences as a father to draw upon in this film, and I felt that that came through. So I actually give this film a 7.9 for the simple fact that it brought out the feels in such an unexpected way and seemingly maintained the emotional integrity of the original source material, and for me, that was quite an achievement.
Wow. For me, say, Matt and Maddie's irrefutable and extensive love for one another just emanates from Kevin and Melody. Kevin Hart manages to showcase an in-depth emotion that, you know, I feel like he's reserved from his previous films. The film explores the layers involved when raising a child as a single parent and the complexities that are involved. Throughout the entirety of the film, there's always the three of them. The spirit of Maddie's mother is ever present, and fatherhood managed to roll out the tears. And it's for these reasons I give the film a 7.5 out of 10.
Wonderful. Well, that's all from us, folks. Next week, we're pulling out another film from the Studio Ghibli Library and reviewing Earwig and the Witch. And remember, you can also let us know what films you'd like us to review as well. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
I can't wait for another delight from Studio Ghibli. But with that being said, guys, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And we'll see you all next week.